Stop it! Wesley yelled, bounding down the basement stairs three at a time. He tried to grab her, but she slipped through his hands and hit her punching bag even harder. She pulled back, ready for one more punch, but Wesley stood in front of her. Get out of my way, Wes, she ordered, wiping sweat off her forehead. It rained off her, down her bare arms, soaking her wraps all the way through. Nora, Wesley said, taking her by the wrists. She struggled a little, but he wouldn't let her go. You're out of your mind. You're going to hurt your hands. I don't care. Yes, you do. You don't even have gloves on. You're going to hurt yourself, and you're not going to be able to write for a week. Nora pulled away from him. It doesn't matter anymore, she said. Why? It's off. The whole thing's off. Some jackass at Royal knew about me and told Zack before I could, she said, panting the words. He was, to say the least, unhappy. He called off the contract? Wesley asked, looking shaken to the core. Yeah, it's dead. He's done with me and the book. Wesley shook his head. He can't do that. I'll call him. I'll talk to him. Nora laughed coldly. Not even you could sweet-talk him, kid. He said it's over. He meant it. There are other editors. Nora shook her head. Zack knew my book better than I know it. I can't finish it without him. Yes, you can. You've gotten 5 books published already. Gutter stories from the gutter snipe writer, she said, untwining her hand wraps. And now it's back to the gutter. They were good stories. You know I don't like stuff like that, and even I enjoyed reading them. You don't need Zack, or me, or anyone else to tell you how to write. You're a good writer, Nora. You're my favorite writer. Your favorite writer, she said, and laughed. She took a long, slow breath. Too bad. I'm now a retired writer. Wesley's eyes widened in terror. Nora, don't. I don't know why I even thought about quitting the game. I make more in a month than King and I did on my first and second books combined. Nora threw her hand wraps on the floor and started up the basement stairs. Wesley followed hard on her heels. You don't have to go back. I balanced your bank statements. You've got enough money to live on for 5 years or longer. I plan on living longer than 38. Life's expensive. Nora stood in the kitchen and pulled a cup from the cabinet and filled it with water. She drank it down in a few hard gulps. She slammed the cup down on the counter and reached for her red hotline phone. Wesley reached out and put his hand on hers. I'll give you every penny I have. His eyes were black with fear. That's sweet, Wes, but you're an unpaid intern, remember? With that, she hit the number 8 on her speed dial and held it down. Enchanté, madame. To what do I owe this pleasure? Kingsley asked. My waiting list. Who's on it? It would take less time to tell you who isn't, Cherry. Call them. Set it up. Call whom? All of them. You're right, Luxembourg is a small kingdom. Let's expand the realm, shall we? She expected Kingsley to laugh or thank her. Instead, she heard him exhale and speak in a way she very rarely heard, with sincerity. Elle, are you sure about this? Yes. As you wish, Cherie. Smile, King, Nora said with a laugh. Let's make lots of money. Chapter 27 2 weeks left. Zack paced around his flat, trying to decide where to begin packing. His flight to L.A. was in exactly 13 days. He'd arrive on Sunday morning, get settled into the temporary quarters that Royal had rented for him, and he'd start work on Monday. There was little to pack, so he wasn't sure why he was bothering about it so soon. With his work at Royal New York almost finished, he didn't know what else to do with himself. He opened a cardboard box and started packing his books. The Great Gatsby, the book that first turned him onto modern American literature when he was a university student. Atonement by Ian McEwan. A glorious story, one of McEwan's best. Zack stared a long time at the title of the next book, Of Human Bondage by W. Somerset Maugham. Nora had joked about that book once, that she was quite disappointed that no one actually got tied up in it. When he realized he was smiling at the memory, he made himself stop. Everything was over with Nora now. The book, the deal, the promise of a few nights together before he was gone. He was so angry with himself. He thought that once he was settled out in L.A., she would come visit for a few days. He had offhandedly mentioned the idea a week ago. She had asked him if he had ever heard of something called goths in hot weather. Apparently leather and tropical weather didn't mix. But she had said she would consider it, if he begged enough. He'd even been fully prepared to beg. It was useless. Nothing he did could exorcise thoughts of Nora from his mind. The anger had burned itself out yesterday and turned into a cold, hard fist of anguish in the pit of his stomach. He half hoped she'd call. Even another fight was preferable to the bitter silence that had become the last 3 days since he had told her it was over. Zack went into the bedroom and looked around. Perhaps there was something in here he could pack that wouldn't spur such potent and painful thoughts. He stared at the clothes in his closet and considered packing some of them. But he still had over a week in New York, and he didn't have the energy for sorting out what he'd wear from what he wouldn't. Giving up, Zack sat on his bed with his elbows on his knees. He rubbed the bridge of his nose, sensing a headache coming on. He looked down to the floor and saw the corner of Nora's manuscript peeking out from under the bed. What hurt more than anything was knowing how good the book could have been. She was almost finished with it. 100 pages or so was all that was left to rewrite. So close. It would have outsold all her other books combined. Outsold all of Finley's dull, dreary, pretentious postmodern books combined. It would have been a sensation. With his heel, Zack kicked the manuscript all the way under the bed. He started pulling clothes from the closet and throwing them into an empty box. He'd just give them all away. Everything. He'd start over completely in L.A. After a few minutes, Zack realized what an idiot he was being. No matter what he did with his things, burn them, bury them, or send them by mail, he would take nothing with him to L.A. He had nothing anymore. And nothing was very easy to pack. More exhausted than she'd ever been in her life, Nora dropped her toy bag in the entry hall and didn't even pet the dogs. She stumbled up the stairs of Kingsley's townhouse and stopped at the second floor. She'd been staying with Kingsley since Saturday, not wanting to subject Wesley to the torment of not knowing how many jobs she was taking in an effort to get Zack and her abortive novel out of her system. Wesley called every day, and every day she texted him the same message. "I'm fine, kid. I'll be home soon." 3 clients today, 2 men and 1 woman. The men were actually the easier gigs. One had a foot fetish and would pay through the nose just to kiss her boots for hours on end. The other was a masochist who was at his happiest when he was tied up, called a slut, and beaten black and blue. Both were married men, upstanding members of their communities. They came to her to keep their marriages and lives intact. A few hours with her a month, and they could go back to their regular lives until the pressure built up again, and they had to let off their secret steam. Women, as usual, were much more work, but at least Nora liked this girl. She was one of Griffin's trust fund friends, who hadn't come out to her family yet, afraid they'd cut her off until she straightened up. Nora felt sorry for the girl. She knew all too well how difficult it was to tell the truth about who you really were to the people you cared about. Kingsley had given Nora the room next to his after she had reluctantly turned down his invitation to join him in his own bed. Zack had accused Kingsley of being her pimp, but it was just one more thing that Zack didn't have a goddamn clue about. Kingsley had saved her life 5 years ago. They were friends and business partners, and right now, business was good. Without even bothering to undress, Nora collapsed onto the bed. She didn't have to wait long before Kingsley made his usual nightly appearance. Comment ça va? Kingsley asked as he came into the guest room without knocking. Je suis too fucking exhausted to speak French, monsieur. J'accepte. He sat next to her on the edge of the bed. His hair was unbound, and he'd abandoned his suit jacket for the night. He looked ridiculously dashing in the dark vest and knee boots in a gypsy king sort of way. She decided not to tell him that. Drink? He held out a glass of wine to her. God bless. She took a very unladylike gulp of one of Kingsley's best Merlots. The distinguished gentleman from New York called again. He said he'd consider changing his vote if you considered changing your mind. Did he consider upping his offer? Nora hated Senator Palmer. He was a family values Republican by day and an S&M fiend and pervert by night. When her work got too difficult, she focused on the money. She'd never forget the desperation that had brought her to Kingsley 5 years ago. She'd learned a long time ago that money didn't buy happiness, but it did buy a roof over your head. And that was more than she'd had when she started this job. He doubled it, Cherie. Doubled it? Our hard-earned taxes at work. What are taxes? Kingsley asked, and they laughed. She prayed the IRS never got a look at Kingsley's books. What should I tell him? Tell him yes. I don't care. He's at least easy to please. Any idea why he likes getting the shit kicked out of him by a grown woman in a schoolgirl uniform? He was the U.S. envoy to Japan for a few years. Perhaps he read too much manga. Tell him Wednesday night, and that's it. I need a day off. She stretched out to take the pressure off her aching shoulders. She wished Wesley were here. He had this magic way of rubbing her back that not only made the pain go away, but made her forget how it got there in the first place. Wesley. It had been 4 days since she had even seen him. Was he eating like he was supposed to? Checking his numbers? Nora forced Wesley's worries out of her mind. Thinking about him hurt almost as much as her back did. Kingsley tapped the end of her nose to get her attention. You have a day off, Thursday, recall? A certain member of the clergy would have me in the Judas chair if I dared to interfere with your holy Thursday ritual. Nora closed her eyes. Thursday, her anniversary with Soren. You know, King, you pretend to be all debased and amoral, but I think deep down you're a romantic. You have to stop playing matchmaker. Leaving Soren was the hardest thing I've ever done. Going back to him would be the only thing harder. Mais oui, King said and stood up. But as you know, mon père was a Frenchman, and I have a Frenchman's heart. We French do love our romances. Soren and I aren't a romance. We're just a fantasy. Bien sûr, ma chérie. Kingsley bowed to her as he backed out of the room. You are a writer, after all. You would know your genre, I suppose. Nora reached out and turned off the light next to the bed. She lay alone in the dark. I was the writer, she said to the ceiling, and I don't know anything at all. Nora stood outside her house and took slow, shallow breaths. They didn't help. She walked to the edge of the porch, leaned over, and threw up in the bushes. Life at Shea Kingsley was harder on her than it once was. She'd taken a few too many of her pills, drank more than she needed to, had done and seen things she wished she hadn't. She wiped her mouth and took the house keys from her pocket. She hadn't been home since Saturday. 5 days gone, and she already felt like a stranger breaking into her own house. She said nothing as she passed Wesley's room on the way to hers. She was single-minded in her destination. She went to her bedroom and brushed her teeth before sinking into the bathtub fully dressed. That was as much as she could do. A few minutes later, she heard a gentle knock on the bathroom door. I'm in the bathtub, she said. I'm coming in anyway. Wesley pushed tentatively through the door, wearing a fretful look on his face. She glanced his way but couldn't meet his eyes. He knelt next to the bathtub and laid his head on his crossed arms. You're wearing clothes, Nora. I know. There's no water in the tub, he said, with the slightest smile on his face. I said I was in the bathtub, I didn't say I was taking a bath.
That's true, Wesley conceded. Nice to see you again, stranger.
I'm a stranger to myself these days. Don't take it personally.
Any particular reason why you're in a school uniform with your hair in pigtails and sitting in an empty bathtub?
Because I need a bath.
You look clean enough to me.
Nora swallowed and started to rock slowly back and forth.
I was with a bad person tonight, she whispered.
The smile left Wesley's face.
Did he hurt you?
He paled at the mention of the idea.
I hurt him. It's what he paid me for.
After he said thank you, he said...
Nora pulled her knees tight to her chest.
She said he's in love with his 12-year-old niece, and it helped to have someone dress like her and beat it out of him.
Oh, my God, Wesley breathed. What did you do?
Nothing. I wanted to hit him, but hitting a masochist is pretty pointless.
Wesley.
She finally looked him full in his face. For a moment his brown eyes turned silver, and she saw Michael's face floating in front of her.
What if I'm a bad person, too?
You're not a bad person.
If you were a bad person, you wouldn't be sitting fully dressed in a bathtub with no water in it, because you're terrified you might be a bad person.
The devil doesn't worry about going to hell, only because he's already there.
Wesley sighed. He reached out, pushed down the bathtub stopper, and started the water running.
He took her shoes off one by one and pulled her knee socks down and off her feet.
What are you doing? She asked, as the warm water started to surround her.
You said you needed a bath, so you're gonna have a bath, okay?
Nora nodded.
Okay.
Wesley eased the ponytail holders out of her hair and ran his finger through her long locks to loosen them. The water rose up to the top of her thighs.
Wesley took some of her bubble bath off the ledge and poured it in.
The scent of orchids filled the bathroom as the bubbles rose on a weightless white wave.
Wesley paused and seemed to steel himself.
He started to unbutton her shirt as it was quickly getting soaked. She lifted her arms when he tugged to let him pull it off her. The water and bubbles were up to her chest now.
Wesley pulled off his flannel overshirt, and in his short-sleeved t-shirt, he reached into the water and unzipped the back of her short plaid skirt. She raised her hips so he could pull it out from underneath her. He reached back into the water and found her panties.
She tried to meet his eyes, but he looked only at the black and white tile as he slid her underwear down her legs and discarded the wet cotton onto the pile with the rest of her clothes. She laughed as he struggled with the clasp of her bra.
"You men," she said. "The bra clasp defeats you every time."
I think a demonic engineer must have designed these things. I may have to get the bolt cutters.
Wesley finally got the clasp undone.
Watch out, bras are often booby-trapped, Nora warned.
You're out of your mind, Wesley said as he slid the straps of her bra slowly down her shoulders. The bubbles were up to her neck now. She tried to let the heat seep in and relax her, but the tension remained.
You keep saying that. Do you really think I'm crazy?
Wesley turned the water off.
I'm the virgin living with an erotica writer. I think it's pretty safe to say we both need our heads examined.
Nora reached out a wet hand and laid it on top of his halo of blonde hair.
You have a good head.
Wesley took her hand and kissed the back of it.
So do you, and a wet head.
He grabbed her by the shoulders and dunked her under the water. She came up spitting and laughing.
That, she said, dragging her wet hair off her face, was uncalled for.
It was totally called for.
Wesley took a bottle of shampoo off the tub ledge and poured some out in his hands. He began massaging it into her soaking hair.
Nora sighed with pleasure as his fingers ran through her hair and rubbed her scalp.
Wesley really did have amazing hands. The combination of strength and gentleness threatened to undo her. If she wasn't careful, she was going to start crying.
You're pretty good at this, kid. You've given a lot of grown women baths.
Nope. But I have groomed many a filly in my day. This isn't that different.
Thank you for comparing me to a horse.
You compared me to one, he reminded her with a faint blush.
That was a compliment. A big one. Wesley didn't say anything to that. He leaned her back into the water to rinse the shampoo out of her hair. His fingertips brushed her cheek and forehead. "Wes, are you okay with what happened the other night with us?" He gave her a little half-smile as he pulled her back up out of the water.
"Of course I am. Is any guy on the planet going to complain about that?"
"I was just worried that maybe, I don't know, you thought I took advantage of you in your weakened condition."
"I had a hard-on, not cancer. I don't think we should make a habit of it. But I don't know."
He wiped the soap off her face with a dry towel.
"I liked it.
Nothing more to it."
"Is there more to this?" She nodded at her naked body hiding under the bubbles.
"Sometimes a bath's just a bath," he said, and flicked water at her. She laughed as Wesley took the bottle of conditioner off the shelf and began running it through her hair. Before she realized it, tears were mingling with the water and running down her face. She knew Wesley saw, but he said nothing, just kept scrubbing her down.
"Soren used to give me baths."
She grabbed the towel and swiped at the tears. "It's a very dominant thing to be completely clothed while your lover is naked.
I gotta tell you, I don't feel a bit dominant right now."
"What do you feel?" He looked at her, looked like he was going to say something to her.
"I'm just glad you're home. Wet and naked isn't bad either."
Nora leaned back into the water and did her best to rinse the conditioner out of her hair while Wesley stood up and unfurled a clean towel.
"Don't look," she said.
Wesley laughed but didn't object. Closing his eyes, he turned his head away. Nora rose out of the water and stepped into the towel. With his eyes still closed, he wrapped it around her. She burst into surprised laughter when he lifted her off her feet and hoisted her over his shoulder. He threw her wet body, towel and all, down on the bed.
"Are you going to ravish me now?" she asked, even though she already knew the answer.
"I'm going to dress you. Where are your PJs?"
"The dirty laundry, I think. I've been gone a few days, sort of let the laundry go."
"How about this?" Wesley left her for less than a minute while he ran back to his room. He returned with a clean pair of his boxer shorts and one of his T-shirts.
"Good enough?"
"Perfect." She slid the shorts on under the towel. Wesley turned his head again when she dropped the towel and pulled his T-shirt on. Sliding into his clothes felt like being in his arms. They were warm and clean and smelled like a summer morning. She toweled her hair and squeezed as much water out of it as she could while Wesley pulled the covers back. She crawled into her bed and was relieved by the familiar scent of her sheets, the familiar fabric, and Wesley so close by.
"What time is it?"
The past few days, time had poured through her hands like water. She only knew it was Wednesday because that was the day that came before Thursday.
"Almost midnight."
Wesley dragged the covers over her. She sighed with pleasure, feeling human for the first time since last Friday.
"Almost Thursday."
Nora saw a veil fall over Wesley's eyes. He knew exactly what tomorrow was.
"You're gonna see him?"
Wesley sat next to her. She scooted closer and looked up at him with tired eyes.
"I have to."
He nodded. He usually argued with her whenever she said she had to do something he knew she didn't have to do. This time he seemed to understand.
"You still love him, don't you?"
Nora smiled sadly up at him.
"Many waters."
She ran a hand through her wet hair and let water drop from her fingertips to the floor.
"Many waters cannot quench love," Wesley finished the quote. "Rivers cannot wash it away."
"Nor will rivers overflow it," she corrected. "Catholics use the New American.
NIV is what we use in youth group."
"I won't let him hurt me. I promised you I wouldn't. I just have to see him, that's all."
"Okay," he said. "But you'll come home tomorrow night."
"Yeah, I'll come home." Wesley nodded and slid off the side of the bed. He started unbuttoning his jeans.
"What are you doing?"
she asked, as he took off his pants and threw them on a nearby chair.
"Told you. It's almost midnight. Scoot over."
He stripped out of his T-shirt, and Nora moved over to let him slide in next to her. Turning off the bedside lamp, Wesley gathered her to him. She breathed slowly, relaxed onto his chest and melted into his arms. She didn't deserve him. Didn't deserve this. He knew she would see Soren tomorrow, and he didn't hate her for it. She might hate herself, but Wesley would never hate her. Nora traced his collarbone with her fingertips while Wesley slipped his hand under her shirt and slowly kneaded her lower back. She almost laughed at this foreign sensation. For once in her life, she lay in bed with a gorgeous young man, and she had absolutely no desire to seduce him. "We're both wearing your underwear," Nora said after a long silence. "Could be worse. We both could be wearing your underwear." She smiled, knowing that even more than the bath, just having Wesley so close to her made her feel clean and sane again. When Soren touched her, she became his. When Wesley touched her, she became herself. Nora's hand slid from his chest to his arm. Wesley had twice the muscle she did. He could hurt someone so much more easily than she could, and yet she knew he would never hurt anyone unless he was trying to protect someone else. She'd seen that with her own eyes. "Wes," she said as she felt sleep coming for her.
"What, Noor?"
"I love you," she thought, but didn't say the words out loud. "Thanks for the bath." Chapter 28. Wesley had already gone by the time Nora rolled out of bed the next morning. Morning? She thought, and then looked at the clock. It was already afternoon. She dragged herself from the tangle of her sheets. She went to her closet and dug through it. Today she would do something she did only once a year, dress conservatively. She found her only skirt that went past her knees, her only black shoes with a low heel, her only blouse that wasn't designed to show every inch of cleavage. She even found a strand of pearls she had received as a gift from her grandmother years ago and put them on. She pulled her hair back and up, taming the wavy mane as best she could, and applied half her usual amount of makeup. Today she was going to church. As Nora drove, she fought off the twin demons of eagerness and fear that this day always visited upon her. Shortly after 3, she pulled into the parking lot at Sacred Heart Catholic Church. She had been christened here as an infant, made her first communion here, and this was where she first saw Soren over 18 years ago. Sacred Heart had thrived under Soren's watch. From barely over 100 members, the church had trebled in size during his time here. A handsome polygot, only 29 years old when he first arrived, he was everything priests were not usually known for being. Erudite, witty, and charming. 2 other priests in nearby dioceses had been removed from their post for allegations of sexual offenses in the past 2 decades. Catholic parents brought their children to Sacred Heart in droves. They knew Father S. could be trusted. And although Nora knew who he was with her behind closed bedroom doors, those parents were right to trust him. It was funny, she thought, as she entered through the front doors of Sacred Heart, how little she remembered of her childhood here. Even Father Greg, Soren's predecessor, wavered in her mind as little more than a memory of elderly kindness. Then one Sunday, when she was 15 years old, Soren had come like an annunciation. It was as if God himself had hailed her by name. She paused in the foyer and glanced around. Foyer. Soren always corrected her when she called it that.
"It's the narthex, Eleanor," he had said, hiding his smile. "Not the foyer."
Next time she referred to it in his presence, she called it the lobby. Glancing around, Nora tried to sift through the thousands of memories that descended on her. She saw the little shrine to the Virgin Mary in the corner of the entryway and the burning candles beneath her. Nora stood before the shrine, closed her eyes, and remembered. She'd been 16 years old, almost 17, and her best and only friend was a girl named Jordan. Introverted and shy, Jordan had no idea she was also quietly beautiful. They had gone to the same Catholic high school, had most of the same classes, all the same but for English her junior year. Nora had been in the highest level class, and Jordan, never the writer Nora was, had an easier teacher. Nora would never forget the ashen look on Jordan's face one day after school. It took 3 days for Nora to drag it out of her. Jordan's English teacher, a married man in his 40s, had kept her after class and put his hand up her skirt. He had offered her an easy A in the class in exchange for the obvious. Nora had been livid and threatened to beat the teacher to death with her bare hands. Jordan had sobbed, terrified that no one would believe her, that no one would help her. After all, this English teacher was also the basketball coach, and the team was having the best season in years. Jordan made Nora promise not to tell the school, and in return, Nora made Jordan promise to tell Father S. To this day, Nora still didn't know what Soren had done or said to the teacher. She only knew Soren had gone to her school on a Friday, and by Monday the teacher was gone. Nora had raced to church after school that day and found Soren praying here by the shrine to the Virgin Mary. She had told him how grateful Jordan was, how shocked the whole school was, how nobody knew why the coach had left so abruptly. Soren hadn't smiled. He'd only lit a candle. Was that hard to do? She remembered standing in this very spot and asking him that question. Telling that guy off? It was frighteningly easy to put the fear of God into him, Soren had said. And almost enjoyable. Why do you ask, Eleanor? She had zipped up her hooded sweatshirt and plucked nervously at the ragged cuffs. I thought it might be hard for you. You know, since you're in love with me. Soren met her eyes, and she saw she had actually managed to catch him off guard, one of the few times in their 18 years she had. Eleanor, there are suicide bombers on the Gaza Strip who are less dangerous than you are. He started towards his office. She followed him, nearly running to keep up with his long strides. I'm going to take that as a yes, she had said when they arrived at his office door. I've always been an admirer of the Cistercian monks. Soren stepped into his office, especially their vow of silence, and he'd closed the door in her face. She had smiled non-stop for the next 2 weeks. Nora opened her eyes and stepped away from the shrine and out of the memory. Her heels clicked on the hardwood floors, grown slick and shiny with age. She thought she'd find Soren in his office working. But she paused outside the sanctuary when she heard the sound of a piano wafting through the heavy wooden doors. Inhaling the muted notes, she slipped inside the nave and stepped quietly through the chancel, where Soren sat at a grand piano. He didn't look up at her as she came to the piano. She placed her hands flat on its polished black top. Closing her eyes again, she let the subtle waves vibrate through her and into her. The last note shivered up her arms and down to her feet. As the note echoed through the nave and back to the altar, Nora opened her eyes. The Moonlight Sonata, Nora said. My favorite. Soren smiled and played a few stray notes. I know it is. Nora returned the smile and leaned forward, running her hand over the smooth black surface. Happy anniversary, Soren. Soren smiled again. One of his rare, genuine smiles that reached his eyes. Something caught in her chest, and she let her own smile fade. Happy anniversary, little one, he said, his voice as gentle as the last note of the sonata. With those four words came 1,000 more memories. She and Soren had never, would never marry, and never dated in the traditional sense of the word. But never had they questioned what day would become the signifier of the beginning of their life together. The first time Soren had beaten her and then taken her virginity was 13 years ago on Holy Thursday, the day before Good Friday, the day when Christ celebrated his Last Supper. Jesus, God incarnate, had knelt before his disciples and washed their feet on this night. 13 years ago tonight, Soren had done the same to her. Even as the liturgical calendar changed, they never once considered celebrating their anniversary on any other day but this too neglected holy day, this last night of Christ's freedom before he was taken, this last night to share a quiet moment alone with those he loved. Soren began playing the haunting melody again, and she let it draw her inexorably into its insistent rhythms. She watched his hands, his perfect pianist's hands, and recalled all too well how intimately she knew those hands, how intimately they knew her. One courageous strand of Soren's perfect blonde hair threatened to fall over his forehead. She longed to reach out and brush it back. "You played this for me that night," she said as the music faded. Nora closed her eyes and let the past come to her. "You were playing it when I came to the rectory." She remembered that night like yesterday, slipping in through the tree-shrouded back door, following the music to Soren's elegant living room. She stood in silence and watched the priest who would become her lover that night play by the light of a single candle the world's most beautiful piece of music, as if it had been written by him and for her. "The next morning I awoke up in your bed for the first time."
"The best morning of my life," Soren said.
"And mine."
Nora felt the old tug of love and straightened, trying to brush it off her.
"When did the church get a grand piano?"
Soren smiled.
"A mysterious stranger had an imperial Bösendorfer delivered to my home on my most recent birthday. I donated my Steinway to the church."
"That was very generous of that mysterious stranger," Nora said with a sheepish grin.
"Very generous indeed, although the Steinway still plays beautifully.
It's had a tricky sustain pedal for ages."
"Yes, and whose fault is that?"
"That is not my fault," Nora protested. "Do you recall what you were doing to me at the time? I had to hold on to something, didn't I?"
Soren looked down at his hands. His fingers hovered over the keyboard, playing soundless phantom notes.
"You could have held on to me."
Nora only swallowed, finding herself in a rare moment of speechlessness. Perhaps sensing her discomfort, Soren dropped his hands to the keyboard and began playing again.
"The Moonlight Sonata is a strange piece of music," Soren said. "It's been called a lamentation. You can feel that when you play it. Can feel the sorrow and the need in the endless repetitions. It's simple to play, but maddeningly difficult to play well. The arpeggios allow great freedom of expression. Too much freedom in untutored, unskilled hands. They say Beethoven wrote it for a 17-year-old countess, the Countess Giulietta Guicciardi. He may have loved her. More likely, he was simply trying to seduce her."
"It would have worked for me."
"It did work for you."
This time Nora smiled at the memories Soren's words conjured. Again she slid her hands lovingly over the piano.
"My God, the crimes against nature that we have committed on this piano."
"I hope you aren't referring to my playing."
"Never. I know how gifted those hands of yours are."
"Some decorum, please. We are in church, Eleanor."
Soren reminded her with only a playful hint of sternness about his lips.
"Forgive me, Father."
She composed her features into a pantomime mask of contrition.
"Of course, little one. I can forgive you anything. But don't think you won't be called upon to do your penance someday."
Before she could respond, the unmistakable squeak of sneakers on hard wood sounded outside the door. Another louder squeak followed that one, and then the shrieking giggles of children.
"Duty calls."
Soren rose from the bench. Nora walked with him down the aisles and into the hall outside the sanctuary. They followed the sound of the children from the church to the annex that housed the fellowship hall and the church kitchen. Soren led her into the fellowship hall that was part gymnasium, part reception area. And before her was a scene of animal chaos. Her mental description proved even more apt as a boy dressed as a sheep careened by them.
"What on earth?"
Nora asked as they found a quiet place near the kitchen.
"The children are practicing for Sunday's Passion Play," Soren explained.
Everywhere children ran to parents, from parents, sometimes through parents. As Soren's presence became known, however, the din quieted and order began to reassert itself. She had always admired that about Soren. He let his presence speak far more often than his words. Nora's eyes stopped on a woman who looked vaguely familiar. As her features came into better focus, Nora placed a name to the face.
Nancy James, one of her favorite mothers here. Sometimes it was hard for Nora to imagine that it was only 5 years ago that she still attended this church, babysat these kids, chatted with those parents. Nora was finally able to catch her eye and smile. It took Nancy a moment, but then she returned the smile with full recognition. 5 years. It felt like just yesterday. It felt like a million years ago. Did they know about us? Nora inclined her head toward a group of parents. She kept her voice unnecessarily low. With all the children, she could have screamed the question at Soren without fear.
I am still a priest. I believe it is safe to assume they either never suspected or they never cared.
Nora laughed coldly. Ex-con Elie Schreiber and the sainted Father Stearns? Of course they never suspected.
Eleanor, they never thought as ill of you as you believed. When you come back, you will be welcomed with open arms.
I'm not coming back.
A faint smile played at the corner of Soren's exquisite lips.
And yet you are here.
Nora started to argue, but she caught a glimpse of mirror-pale eyes across the room and froze. Michael, she breathed.
Yes, he's helping with the passion play this year. He's quite good with the children. Around them he can relax, which is difficult for him in other situations.
At the moment, Michael looked anything but relaxed. His long black hair was pulled back in a ponytail, but she could see frustrated strands loose about his face. Children bustled around him frantically. He straightened halos, retied wings, wrestled the little angels. A shepherd nearly plowed into him, and he laughed and slid out of the way. Is he okay? Nora asked, a knife of guilt threatening to cut into her.
He and his mother started attending here over 2 years ago. This is truly the most contented I've ever seen him.
He's at peace now, almost happy.
There is a new look in his eyes, relief.
Relief? That he isn't alone?
Yes. I told him about us, who we are, the other world we live in. I realize I was taking a great chance by doing so, but he had listened all too well to his father's words and convinced himself that he was sick and depraved for his desires. But telling only goes so far.
Show, don't tell, Nora said with a grim smile, and made herself not think of Zack. It's not fair, you know. It's such a double standard. You let me have Michael and he's only 15, but you made me wait until I was 20.
Soren inhaled slowly.
That was my mistake.
Miracles do happen. You just admitted to a mistake. What was your mistake? Not fucking me sooner?
It was my mistake.
He turned and met her eyes,
thinking we had all the time in the world.
Nora's heart contracted in her chest. She studied Michael from across the room. He was far from jubilant, but she could see his posture had eased, and he had a light in his eyes. She would never have guessed from just looking at him that he wore such fearsome scars underneath his wristbands.
You owe Michael a small debt of gratitude, Eleanor.
Soren interrupted her melancholy meditation.
I had counted the day you left as the worst day of my life. The day I knelt in the back of an ambulance and administered last rites to a 14-year-old boy.
Knocked me out of first place, did he?
Perhaps a tie for first.
His scars are horrific. I can't believe he survived that.
It was not a premeditated attempt. He broke glass and slashed fast. He bled profusely, but not fast enough that we didn't have time to save him. Still, the attending physician called his survival a miracle.
I'm glad he made it. He's a sweet kid.
As Nora said the words, Michael looked in their direction for the first time. His silver eyes widened with shock at the sight of her. His skin flushed, and a look of pure panic eclipsed his face.
Soren.
Nora was afraid Michael was about to lose it.
Just watch, Eleanor.
Michael kept looking at her.
But she did as Soren ordered. Michael closed his eyes and took a deep breath. The red faded from his face. His body went calm and slack. He opened his eyes again and met her gaze once more. And then, of all things, he smiled at her.
He's fine, Soren said.
He is one of us, after all.
You care about him very much, I can tell, she said.
He's become like a son to me.
How sweet. Like Abraham and Isaac.
I know you are still angry that I didn't tell you his age. Had I told you, would anything have been different, apart from this impressive claim to righteous indignation?
Nora opened her mouth to protest, but a boy of about 5 or 6 squealed past them.
Owen! Soren called out, freezing the little boy in his tracks. Come here, young man.
Soren snapped his fingers and pointed at a spot on the floor in front of him. Little Owen slumped over and slunk to the spot. Nora had to bite her lip to keep from laughing. Owen was the cutest little thing with his curly black hair sticking out in all directions.
Yes, Father S?
The boy asked, and kicked at the hard wood, making his soul squeak on purpose.
Owen, please examine your shoes.
Obediently, Owen looked down. His whole body heaved the most forlorn sigh she'd ever heard come from a child.
I forgot.
Owen looked up at Soren with pleading eyes.
You forgot to tie them, or you forgot how to tie them? Soren asked.
I forgot how.
Eleanor, I believe this is your area of expertise.
I'll try, but I'm a little out of practice. Nora knelt in front of him and attempted to demonstrate the bunny rabbit method, the two loops as ears and the loop around the loop. Owen just watched her with his grave eyes.
Does that make any sense, Owen?
She asked as she stood up again.
I don't know. It's just so hard. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Owen. Nora watched as Soren reached out and placed the tip of his finger between Owen's eyes. Owen's eyes crossed, and both he and Soren laughed.
You're dismissed, but do try to stay in the slow lane, please.
Owen took off again, but this time at a more restrained pace. Nora glanced across the hall, past the tables to where the parents sat talking amongst themselves, but never taking their eyes off their kids. I wanted to have your children once, she said, not looking in his eyes.
I told you, Michael is like a son to me, and you had him, did you not?
Nora inhaled sharply. There's a difference between sadism and cruelty. I hope you learn that someday.
Remind me which of those you prefer.
I'm going, Soren. Thank you for another lovely anniversary. Nora turned on her heel and strode from the hall. She heard footsteps behind her but kept walking. She only made it as far as the entryway when she heard her name. She stopped and turned around to face Soren. It's hard enough for me to come to this place again and see you, she said. You don't have to make it harder. Soren raised a hand to the side of her face. He brushed her cheek with his fingertips. She glanced around to make sure no one was there watching them. It was a habit she'd never break.
Forgive me. This is difficult for me as well.
I didn't think anything was difficult for you. Soren lowered his hand and stepped out of the sunlight and into the shadows by the shrine of the Virgin Mary.
Surely you of all people cannot think so highly of me.
Nora smiled and followed him into the shadows. The day I first saw you, I thought you were omnipotent.
You were 15, Eleanor.
I still think that. Soren's laugh was empty and somber.
If I were omnipotent, you would still be with me, little one. I didn't have the strength to stop you from leaving.
You did, she said. But you loved me too much to use it.
Perhaps I've always loved you too much.
Soren turned his eyes up to the Virgin Mary statue.
Our mutual acquaintance tells me you've given up work on your book.
Nora tugged at her shirt cuffs. Zack found out about what I do. He killed the deal.
Surely you can write without him.
I'm not sure I can. He made me see my book with new eyes. I was just a smutty storyteller before him. For a little while I felt like a real writer.
Answer a question for me, Eleanor. Why did you begin your work with our monsieur?
I had nothing. He offered me a job.
You could have worked any number of jobs. Why that one?
He said I'd make a lot of money working very few hours. I thought it would give me...
She stopped and swallowed.
I thought it would give me time to write.
Your work with Kingsley was merely a means to an end. It was never meant to be the end.
Nora didn't know how to answer that.
Soren reached into his pocket. He pulled out a small black velvet bag and placed it in her hand.
"What's this?" she asked.
"Your real anniversary gift."
Nora opened the bag, and a silver pendant on a chain poured out into her hand. She held it close to her eyes.
"A saint's medal?"
She laughed. "I haven't worn one of these in years. Who is it? Saint Michael? Saint Mary Magdalene?"
"Saint John the Apostle, actually."
"Saint John? Patron saint of fools and ex-lovers?" she hazarded a guess.
"No," Soren said, his voice and eyes gentle. "The patron saint of writers."
Nora's hand shook slightly, and she couldn't quite get the necklace on. Soren took the medal from her and clasped it around her neck. She closed her eyes and relished the brief moment when his arms encircled her.
"Our Lord Jesus had 12 disciples," Soren said, taking a step back. "After his ascension, all were scattered to the four winds and were persecuted unto death. Oddly enough, it was only Saint John, patron saint of writers, who didn't die a martyr."
"You always hated it when I played martyr. You know, I'm not sure I deserve to wear this."
Genesis 1:1. "God said, let there be light, and there was light." God created the world with words, Eleanor. Words are the thread in the fabric of the universe. You write because it brings you closer to God. I was foolish enough once to think I could do that for you. I know better now. This is who you are."
"Zack doesn't think so."
"Then he's a bigger fool than I was. I know you, little one. You wrote your way out of hell once. You can do it again."
"The book's not done, not even close. And I've only got a week left before he leaves for L.A. Not that he'll even bother to read it if I do get it done."
"Then in your vernacular, Eleanor, fuck him. Finish the book. Not for me, or for Zachary, or for Wesley, or even for God. Finish it for you."
Nora laughed against her tears. "Is that an order?"
"Does it need to be?"
Nora thought about it a moment. Thought about the energy that now surged through her veins. She had 1 week before Zack left for L.A. What if she did finish it without him? She could walk up to him and throw the book in his face. The contract be damned. She'd finish it just because she wanted to know how it ended. "No, I think I've got this one."
"Then go," Soren nodded to the entrance.
Nora almost ran to the door, but she stopped at the last moment and turned around.
"You could have kept me. You do know that, don't you?" she asked.
Soren struck a match and lit a candle under the shrine.
"I would that you had kept me."
Nora didn't, couldn't speak. But it didn't matter if she spoke or not, as long as she could write. She stepped out of the foyer into the sunlight. She took one last look back at Sacred Heart and knew her most sacred heart remained inside. Sometimes, she thought to herself, "I wish you'd kept me, too." Wesley was waiting for her in the living room when she got back to the house. He wore a look of profound relief when he saw that she was unharmed. She smiled at how much more thankful he would be in just a few minutes.
"You came home," he said.
"I've got a book to write." A smile as bright as the sun spread across Wesley's face, but it wavered when he held out her red hotline phone.
"It rang while you were gone."
Nora took the phone from his hands and pressed the number 8. For herself and no one else, she would finish the book, but at least this she could do for Wesley.
"Pardonnez-moi, madame,"
Kingsley began as he answered the phone.
"Mais..." "Forget it, King. Don't take this personally, but Mistress Nora is out of business."
"For how long this time, chérie?"
She heard the laughter in his voice. Nora looked at Wesley and smiled.
"Forever."
She dropped the phone on the floor. With one quick stomp, she smashed the cell phone with the heel of her shoe.
Wesley hugged her so hard he lifted her off the ground. "Damn, boy, I don't have a lot of time, and I've got a hell of a lot to write. Brew coffee and turn off all the phones. Unplug the internet. Don't answer the door. For the next week, it's nothing but all-nighters." "I thought you said Zack said." "Fuck Zack. I'm writing it for me." Chapter 29. 1 week left. Zack sipped his coffee and grimaced. "You know, you should really let me make the coffee, boss." Mary entered his office holding a Starbucks cup. She passed it to him, and he took it with gratitude. "Yours is disgusting."
"You'd think with a doctorate from Oxford I'd have learned how to make a proper cup of coffee somewhere along the way. Some of us have the gift, some don't. Poor you swilling gross coffee all your life." Zack grinned at her as she sat in the chair across his desk. "Grace always made our coffee. She had the gift, apparently," Zack said. "American coffee is vastly superior to English coffee anyway. She knew some little shop in London that carried the real beans. She got up early to brew it every morning."
"She sounds like a keeper."
Mary smiled, and then seemed to realize she had said something she shouldn't.
"I'm sorry, Zack."
"It's all right. It's apparently no secret that Grace and I fell apart. Even that arse Finley knows." Mary shuddered with revulsion.
"I can't believe he went to all that trouble, leaving all those dirty little presents, just to get under your skin. And then all that stuff he said about Nora. I never told you this, but I really like Nora's books."
"Mary, I had no idea you were of that persuasion."
"I wouldn't say I was of that persuasion, but I do love a good story, and she writes some torrid ones."
"Her life is her most torrid story," Zack said.
"You say that like it's a bad thing."
"Mary, her books aren't the only thing she sells."
"Yeah, I heard she was the real thing. I can't believe I've been working for someone who was working with a real live dominatrix."
"Not simply a dominatrix. The dominatrix, apparently. I can't have it. She's just supposed to write about it. She's not supposed to live it."
"She doesn't write murder stories, boss. She doesn't kill people on paper and in real life. She just
beats them on paper and in real life," Zack finished for her.
"But they like it. Slightly lower rung on the ladder of horror than murder and rape, don't you think?"
"Mary, you don't mind your husband had other lovers before he met you, do you?"
"Of course not. I had my fair share, too."
"Now, would you mind if you found out these other lovers had paid him for sex?"
Mary laughed at the idea. "I see your point. But still,
I can accept it as a private practice between consenting adults, but to do it with strangers for money..."
Mary exhaled and rolled her eyes. "Boss, do you really think her personal life means she doesn't deserve to be published? That's a little harsh, don't you think? Is this really about her book?"
Zack looked at Mary. "Please don't share this with anyone."
"Jesus, Zack, I'm not JP. You can tell me anything."
"Nora and I, it wasn't strictly business." She nodded her head.
"Well, obviously, your mood definitely improved when you started working with her. Is that why you're so pissed?"
"She lied to me. That's what I can't get over. I cared about her. For the first time since Grace and I separated, I could vaguely imagine myself happy again. Or at least not miserable anymore."
"Maybe she was imagining the same thing with you. Maybe that's why she was afraid to tell you. Or maybe she just wanted you to see her as a writer, and not as, I don't know, a character."
Zack sighed.
He knew Mary had a point. He just didn't want to admit it yet. "Tell me something, boss. What do you think is the highest form of art?"
"Literature," he answered without hesitation. "Painters and sculptors require elaborate supplies and tools. Dancers must have music. Musicians must have instruments. Literature needs nothing but a voice to speak it or sand to scrawl it in."
Neri walked to his office bookshelf and pulled down three Royal House titles. She laid them face down on top of his desk. She pointed one by one at the UPC barcodes on the back. "Even the highest form of art is for sale, Zack. And you, editor extraordinaire, help up the price." Zack met her eyes. "You think I'm a prude?"
"Prude-ish."
Poor JP was heartbroken when you told him it wasn't going to work out with Nora.
"I know. He looked like a boy whose puppy just died. But he kept his promise.
He trusts you. If you say a book shouldn't be published, he won't publish the book. Do you really think the book shouldn't be published?"
Zack stared at Mary. 28 years old, and she was far wiser than he. She was right. At least Nora deserved a chance to tell her side of the story. "You deserve a raise."
"For what, bringing you coffee?"
"And telling me off. And coming in on a Sunday to help me clean house a little.
It's Easter Sunday. You and I are both members of the tribe.
Might as well. Besides, you're the best boss I've ever had.
And you're by far my best assistant ever. Here."
He dug in his messenger bag and pulled out Finley's most recent gift to him.
"Would you like to have these?"
"Finley's last gift. Earrings, I think."
Mary opened the box and burst out laughing.
"What?" Zack asked.
"Nice nipple clamps, boss."
Heat rushed to Zack's face.
"Nipple clamps? I should have known."
"Well, they do look a lot like clip-on earrings," she said.
"But you knew what they were immediately."
Zack raised his eyebrow at her. Mary looked up to the heavens in feigned innocence.
"I don't know. Maybe I am of that persuasion."
She stood up and headed for the door.
"You think I should call Nora?"
Zack asked.
Mary turned around.
"I think you should think about it," Mary said as she left his office.
He picked up the phone and dialed Nora's house number, but there was no answer. He called her cell phone, but it went directly to voicemail. He sent her an email and said only, "Will you call me, please?" but got an automatically generated away message back from her. All it said was, "To whom it may concern. Fuck off, I'm busy." He sighed and gave up. He could only imagine what she was so busy doing, even on Easter Sunday, a day that meant nothing to him but he knew was very important to Catholics. She was clearly hard at work at her other job. He had tried to call her. It just wasn't meant to be. He considered calling Grace. He picked up the phone again, stared at it, then put it back down. He sighed, knowing he was caught. It amused him to think that while he was ostensibly in charge of every aspect of her life, Caroline still believed she could control his choice of reading material. Her benign feminine disapproval trumped any act of dominance he could muster. "In the effort to retain my status as the dominant partner in this relationship, consider the following a preemptive strike. I give you permission to criticize my book," William said to Caroline as she knelt on the ground at his feet.
"Camus again?
He's so bleak and melancholy," Caroline chided him. "You can't really think there's something noble about pushing a rock up a hill for all eternity, do you, sir?"
"It's noble because Sisyphus is doing something more than nothing. He knows his task is meaningless and that the world is absurd. But he continues, refusing to surrender to the futility. It is both profound and noble."
"It's depressing. And Camus was an atheist, right?" she countered, resting her chin on his knee.
"He was, yes."
"Then Sisyphus's something is still nothing. Without God, life has no ultimate meaning. Pushing the rock up the hill is no nobler than leaving it at the bottom and just killing yourself."
William smiled down at her as he twisted his fingers into her hair.
"My little Kierkegaard, if it were proved to me right now that heaven's throne sat empty, and at the center of all that exists nothing but a bleak and empty void, I would still make love to you tonight with the same ferocity as I made love to you last night. Is that not a better response than celibacy?"
She blushed like a new bride.
"I think that's a trick question, sir."
"No trick at all,"
He closed his book and set it aside.
And what are you reading now?
I found an old copy of some O. Henry short stories. We read The Gift of Magi my freshman year in high school, and I don't think I've read anything by him since.
Ah, yes. The young couple, desperately poor but deeply in love. She sells her only possession, her lustrous long hair, to buy a chain for her husband's pocket watch. And her husband sells his only possession, his pocket watch, to buy his wife combs for her lustrous long hair. On the altar of love, they sacrifice the only things they have of value.
They have each other, she said, her voice little more than a whisper.
Oh yes, of course, they have each other.
William pulled his hand from her hair and picked up his book again.
And you say Camus is melancholy.
Hey, Cinna's still in her PJs, Wesley said, peeking into her office. Can you afford a 5-minute break?
I need a 5-minute break.
Nora pushed away from her desk and looked at Wesley up and down.
A suit and a tie. Very GQ.
He bowed at her.
It's Easter, Nora.
Could you not even tear yourself away from your book long enough to go to church on Easter?
If I'd gone to church, it would have been Sacred Heart.
Wesley grimaced.
Good point. How's the book coming?
He sat in her armchair across from her desk.
Okay. It's harder not having the daily feedback. I've gotten used to that. But it's progressing. I'm dreading the big scene, though.
What's the problem?
Wesley loosened his tie. Nora put her elbows on her desk and rubbed her temples.
It's a mess. It's the most important scene in the book.
So it's a sex scene?
Right. But it's really difficult for me to write. My guy in the book is pure kink. My girl is vanilla, but trying to be what he wants her to be. But this is the scene where he gives in and tries to be what she wants. It's hard to write vanilla sex when you've never actually had vanilla sex.
Can I help?
You want to help me write a sex scene?
Wesley shrugged.
I've helped you before.
Yeah, and you swore you'd never help me with a scene again after the last time, which I thought was an overreaction on your part.
You left me hogtied on the floor while you made yourself a sandwich.
I offered to share.
Suit yourself. I'm going to get out of these clothes before I suffocate. Holler if you want lunch.
He got up and headed for the door.
Nora looked down at the morass of notes about the big scene.
Wes?
Yes, ma'am.
He spun around in her doorway.
You can help me. I need all the help I can get.
No comment.
Tell me what to do.
Go change first. Meet me in my room when you're done.
Wesley bowed again and yanked his tie off on the way out of her office.
Nora printed off her most recent draft of the big scene.
She'd have to be careful and not let Wesley see the pages, or he might be upset by one or two things he read.
She entered her room and found Wesley already lounging against a mound of pillows piled against the headboard of her massive bed, with one leg bent at the knee, his arm resting on it. He now was barefoot and wore only jeans and a white T-shirt.
With the sunlight in his sandy blonde hair, Wesley looked even more enticing than usual, and for a moment Nora couldn't quite think of what she was doing.
He looked at her and didn't smile but only raised his chin slightly, as if he knew exactly what she was thinking.
Had she seen that expression on the face of any other man, she would have assumed it was a come-on.
"So what's going on here?" Wesley asked as Nora hopped up on the bed next to him.
"It's hard to explain completely unless you've read the whole book, which you haven't.
You won't let me.
You can read it when it's done.
Maybe.
You've let me read through drafts before.
Are we going to argue or have pretend sex?"
Wesley exhaled.
"Pretend sex, I guess.
What am I doing?"
"Sleeping in bed. She's sleeping on the floor."
"He makes her sleep on the floor?"
"He gives her a blanket."
"Very romantic."
Nora glanced down at her pages, still warm from the printer.
"Okay, I'm her. I wake up and have to have you because while I know we don't belong together, that doesn't change the fact that I love you, and I want to try to make it work. Wesley nodded.
You pretend to be asleep, Nora instructed. Then I'll wake you up.
Then you'll let me make love to you.
Nora expected a laugh or a protest, but Wesley only tilted his head just slightly and sank deeper into her pillows.
Okay, Nora, he said, his voice low and serious. Make love to me then.
Tremors rippled through Nora's fingers as if her hands had fallen asleep and were just now beginning to awaken. To cover her sudden nervousness, she purposefully scanned her scene, looking for a good place to start. Nora took a deep breath and reached out. Wesley was feigning sleep. His head was turned to the side and his eyes were closed. His blonde eyelashes lay on his tan cheeks. She touched his face as gently as she could, and his eyes fluttered open.
What do I do? He asked.
He grabs her wrist, hard but not viciously. Wesley raised his hand and clasped Nora's wrist. She wondered if he could feel her pulse racing.
Then what?
Wesley stroked her wrist with his thumb. He says to her, You know that's against the rules.
And she says?
Nora paused. The light in the room changed as a cloud swallowed the sun and everything was thrown into pale shadows. The darkening room seemed suddenly and dangerously intimate. But she didn't dare stop. She knew how fragile, how easily shattered such a moment was. Her body tensed. The room held its breath.
She says, This isn't about the game. It's just me now. I want, just once, to be with just you.
And he says, He doesn't say anything. They look at each other in the dark until she says,
Please.
Nora's and Wesley's eyes met.
Please. Wesley repeated.
Then what happens?
The big moment.
He's in control the whole time, totally in charge. This is when he lets go and gives himself into her hands. He surrenders.
Wesley nodded his head solemnly.
And she?
She kisses him.
Nora laid her hand on Wesley's chest.
And he lets her.
Nora leaned in even farther, expecting Wesley to stop her at any moment.
When he didn't, she nearly stopped herself. But after the briefest hesitation, she pressed her lips to his.
Opening her mouth, she brushed his bottom lip with the tip of her tongue, and his mouth opened to hers. A million times, perhaps, Nora had imagined what it would be like to finally kiss him. But as they grew to be best friends, she'd tried to stop thinking of him like that. Their friendship was too fragile. It rested on the edge of a knife's blade. Her resolve to love him without making love to him wavered at times, but a profound respect for him kept dragging her wayward heart and body back in line. But as his untutored lips trembled under her lips, and his tongue tentatively sought hers, that resolve threw itself onto that blade, sliced itself in two, slid to the ground and died there, quiet and happy, and without any further protest.
What happens next? Wesley whispered when Nora paused for a breath.
She pulls the covers off him and kisses him from neck to hip.
She doesn't take his pajamas off first.
He sleeps naked. So does she, of course. Wesley smiled at her, and she saw desire in his eyes.
Of course.
Nora pulled back a little and watched Wesley. In the space between them hovered a question that only Wesley could answer. He rose up and with that enviable masculine grace, pulled his t-shirt off and threw it on the floor. But he'd been shirtless around her 1,000 times. She waited. Nora studied his hands for any sign of nervousness, but his fingers didn't quiver at all as he gathered the fabric of her silk camisole in his hand and pulled it off her. She watched him study her naked curves. His gaze of innocent wonder was more erotic than any lascivious stare she'd ever received.
Don't look at me like that, Wes. You gave me a bath a few nights ago.
The bubbles were in the way. Wesley tore his gaze from her breasts and met her eyes.
You're so beautiful.
So are you. Nora fell into his arms again and their mouths met. This time the kiss wasn't remotely tentative. Wesley's lips sought hers again and again. His tongue found hers.
His arms encircled her and pushed her onto her back. He gasped as her lips met his skin. He tilted his chin back to give her better access, access that she took eager advantage of, caressing his shoulders, his chest, and his collarbone with her mouth. She felt unleashed at last, finally free to touch every inch of him, as she'd wanted for so long.
"How am I supposed to do this again?"
he whispered in her ear.
"You just kiss her anywhere and everywhere you want to kiss her," she said, remembering the first night she'd slept next to him, the first time she touched him.
"Anywhere and everywhere." Wesley kissed his way from her neck to her breasts. He paused for a moment and looked at her before lowering his head and taking one of her nipples in his mouth. She arched underneath him and sighed with pleasure. He was eager but gentle. It was the strangest sensation. Her instincts told her to throw him on his back, tie him down, and have her way with him. Lying there so passively while he touched and kissed her felt so unusual, as if he was making love to her in a foreign language. A beautiful language to hear, but one she didn't understand.
Wesley brought his mouth to hers again and shifted so that his body was on top of hers,
his full weight down on her, his hips pressing into hers. He pushed her arms over her head and she smiled. This she was used to. But instead of holding her down by her wrists, Wesley twined his fingers into hers. Something caught in her chest at the simple gesture of tenderness. Pausing from the kiss, Wesley pulled back and looked down at her, and searched her face as though he couldn't believe she was real.
"Please tell me this means as much to you as it means to me," he begged.
Nora swallowed a lump in her throat.
"I'm terrified, Wes. I think it may mean even more to me."
Shaking his head, he smiled.
"Not possible."
Wesley released her hands and pulled her into his arms. His body radiated warmth, and she couldn't seem to get enough of his skin. She wrapped a leg over his back, and Wesley pressed his forehead to the center of her chest. Nora felt a flutter of fear when she remembered this was Wesley, and he would never have sex with anyone he wasn't in love with. The only person she'd ever had sex with who loved her was Soren.
Soren.
Wes stopped for a second. Wes pulled away from her and she saw fear in his eyes.
"I wasn't hurting you, was I?"
She rolled up and pulled her legs to her chest.
"No, you weren't hurting me at all. I just..." She panted a little. "I just need a second. I told you, I've never had vanilla sex before."
Wesley laughed a little.
"Are you a virgin too?"
She met his eyes and smiled.
"Guess so."
Wesley reached out and ran his hand through her hair.
"Nora, I don't think I can do what you do. I've never even had normal sex, much less, you know."
Nora took short breaths.
"I know. I'll try, too."
She pulled Wesley to her again. She wasn't sure how to do this, how to just let go and let him make love to her. They kissed, and he pushed her onto her back. A strange panic set in. This wasn't who she was. Nora Sutherland didn't have vanilla sex. She didn't do missionary position. The last time she had sex on her back and face to face was with Soren, and she'd been in 4-point restraints. She didn't know the rules to this game, but she knew if this happened, if they made love right now, he would believe she loved him as much as he loved her. He wasn't just giving her his body. He was giving her his heart.
"Talk to me, Wesley," she begged.
He grew more courageous with every kiss. His hands roamed over her arms, her breasts, and even slid between her legs and caressed her through the fabric of her silk pajamas.
"Tell me what you want to do."
Wesley placed a hand on the side of her face and caressed her cheekbone with his thumb.
"I want to be inside you."
He breathed the words. She reached between them and unbuttoned his jeans.
"Nora."
She heard a note of panic in his voice.
"We can get under the covers, would that help?"
She hoped he would say yes. Maybe it would help her, too.
"I'm the guy. I'm the one who should be saying that,"
Wesley said with a rueful smile.
Don't worry about it. I'm older and a slut. Let me handle it, okay?
Could she handle it? She wanted to stop, wanted to talk to him before they went any further. She hadn't been nervous like this in years. The night she gave her virginity to Soren felt like destiny. This felt like fear. Wesley laughed.
Okay, here, I would feel much more comfortable under the covers.
Nora scooted off one side of the bed as Wesley slid off the other. As they pulled the sheets back, the pages of her novel fell off the bed and to the floor. Wesley picked them up and glanced at them. Nora crawled across the bed toward him and wrapped her arms around his shoulders. But Wesley didn't respond. He just kept reading. It's just fiction. Nora kissed his shoulder. William and Caroline? Wesley finally tore his eyes from the page. That's your father's name and my mother's name. Is this about us? Nora shook her head. No, not really. Not really. Wesley took a step away from her and grabbed his shirt off the floor. Feeling both defeated and relieved, Nora pulled her camisole back on and sat cross-legged on the bed. No, it isn't our story. He's not quite me, she's not quite you. It's just inspired by us, by things I've thought about because of our relationship. They're lovers. We're just friends. Or were. Jesus, Wes, did you plan this? Nora couldn't quite finish the question. The enormity of what they'd almost done together finally hit her as she surveyed the disheveled bed. You quit your other job. I thought now maybe it might mean as much to you. God, Wesley, it does mean as much to me. Or is this just about your book? He asked, holding the pages in his hand. He glanced down and scanned them. The Gift of the Magi. That's my favorite short story. I know. It's what they're talking about the evening before this scene happens, about what people have to give up when they're together. So, what is his watch? My virginity? I was ready to give that to you. Your innocence. So much more valuable and so much more traumatic to lose. And her hair. What's that? You've already given up your job with King. But I haven't stopped being who I am. It isn't who you are, Nora. It's just what you do. Even if I'm not doing it for money, it's still who I am. And I can't sell it. Not even to buy you a watch chain. It's what writes my books and makes me me. It's the only thing I have of value. And even if you wanted to give me your innocence, wanted to come into my world with combs for my hair, I can't let you do that. So where does that leave us? You tell me. With no Christmas presents, I guess. I guess not, Nora said, suddenly exhausted. Wesley weighed the pages in his hand, flipped through them, and pressed them to his chest. Why did you write this? Write a book about us. Because I guess I've always known you and I can't be together. God, I thought I was going to faint a few minutes ago trying to have vanilla sex with you. I hate that we have this thing between us. It kills me a little bit every day. The book. I don't know, I guess I thought at least we could be together on paper for a little while. It's not much, but it's something, she said, trying and failing to smile. Let me read it. All of it. You don't want to read it, sweetheart. You said it was us. Nora remained unmoved. Please, Wesley said, and Nora heard the slight but desperate catch in his voice. Nodding, she slid off the bed and retreated to her office. She grabbed the binder that held her most recent copy of her novel and returned to her bedroom. It's not done yet. I still have about 8 or so chapters to write. How does it end? I don't know, she lied. The consolation prize. He opened the binder and read the title out loud. Yeah, the consolation prize. You know, it's what you get when you don't win. What do you want to win? In his voice was a quiet promise that if he could give it to her, he would. You, Wes. But I can't win you without selling who I am to afford you. And I can't win you without selling my soul, right? Wesley asked.
Now you see why I said the gift of the Magi was a horror story. Wesley only looked at her before turning his eyes to her novel. She spun on her heels and left Wesley alone in her room with the book she had written in a reckless attempt to exorcise the demon of love from her heart. Once Wesley finished the book, he would know everything. Know the good of her love and the evil. Know she wanted him and why. They'd been so happy together in the strange little paradise they'd made together, but now she felt expulsion was imminent, and she had no one left but herself to blame for her fall. Nora returned to her office and sat at her desk. Outside, the last gasp of the retreating winter winds paced back and forth across her windows. Wesley was going to read her book. She opened her saved draft and put her hands on the keyboard. What could she do but write? At least now she knew how to end the big scene. William would try to make love to Caroline like she wanted. He would try, but he would fail. And between the two of them, a chasm would open up so wide they could not even see to the other side. The moment they tried the hardest to be together is the moment they are forever torn apart. Poor Caroline, Nora thought, and swiped a rogue tear hiding at the corner of her eye. Poor William. Chapter 30. Thursday night at 11:48 p.m. Nora placed the last period in her book. She saved her document and shut down her computer. She could barely suppress her smile as she floated from the office and looked in on Wesley on her way to her bedroom. All week after reading her book, he'd been quiet but not angry. Desperately, she wanted to talk about what had happened between them on Easter, but she knew she needed to leave Wesley alone to think about it on his own. She could barely sleep at night for the flood of memories of Wesley's hands and mouth on her, how close they had come to making love. All this time, he had wanted her even more than she had ever guessed. He had been ready to give her his virginity, to give her his body. Her Wesley. He'd never have sex with someone he wasn't in love with. Wesley in love with her. What was she going to do with that kid? The kid in question was supposed to be sound asleep, but he turned over in his bed and smiled at her through the dark. You have an 8:30 class tomorrow, she reminded him. She came in and sat on the edge of his bed. It's cancelled. Professor Matheny's sick, or he just wants to start the weekend early. Either way, I get to sleep in. Congratulations. She ran a hand through his mussed hair. Can I tell you a secret? Wesley propped himself up on his elbows. Definitely. She leaned forward and whispered in his ear. I finished the book. Are you serious? Wesley pulled back to look at her. Yeah, just now. It's full of typos, but the book itself, it's done. And it's good. Wesley threw his arms around her. That's awesome, Nora. I'm so proud of you. She returned the hug and released him. We'll celebrate tomorrow night. We'll celebrate the best book I've ever written and no one will ever read. Absolutely. But I think someone will read it someday. It's too good to just sit in a drawer. Maybe. But I'm not going to worry about it. And neither are you. Bedtime. Nora started to leave, but Wesley called her name. What's up, kid? Tomorrow night, when we celebrate, I want to talk to you about something. About us. About me. It's not bad, I promise. There's some stuff I want to tell you. A lot of stuff. Tomorrow, it's a date. Night, sweetheart. Nora leaned over to kiss his forehead, but at the last second, Wesley turned his face up and brought his lips to hers. Too shocked to move, Nora only shivered in that eternal moment as a light, white and winged, brushed over her shoulder and settled somewhere she could not see. She was still smiling when she fell asleep that night. Friday morning, Nora woke and dressed and gathered the handful of things she would need for the day. Last night's smile still remained. Without Zack, without anyone, she had managed to finish her book. It was done. It was good. And she couldn't wait to start the next one. And tonight, she and Wesley would celebrate her book
and maybe finally figure out what they were going to do about each other. But first she had an errand to run, and then she had a book to throw in someone's face. Zack sipped his tea and strolled around the conference room making pleasant small talk with his co-workers at his going-away party. JP had hired a very good caterer, but still Zack was taking a lot of ribbing from his refusal to allow JP to spring for lunch at the Four Seasons, especially from Mary. Recession, Zack reminded her. Tangerine cheesecake, she countered.
The lady has a point, JP said. It's quite good cheesecake.
Zack set his tea down. He leaned over the buffet spread, took a plate, and filled it with some gourmet cheese and a piece of cake. Here, he said, handing the plate to JP. You two make your own damn cheesecake. Zack was secretly touched by how many of his colleagues had bothered to come to the luncheon. He knew free food and a break from the desk and the phone would get almost anyone to an office party, but everyone was talking to him and wishing him well in L.A. He almost regretted how his own grief over Grace had kept him from getting to know some of the other editors better. Americans were a fairly charming group of people. Even New Yorkers, not known for their friendliness, were more immediately affable than most Europeans. He decided Americans were quick to like people because they couldn't conceive of anyone not liking them. Even Nora, who made her money being vicious to people, was without a doubt the most engaging person he'd ever met. He recalled how priggish, at moments outright churlish, he had been to her at their first meeting, and how she'd responded only with humor and a promise to try harder for him. Looking around the party, he felt her absence keenly. Had they not fought, she would be here with him right now, toasting her book's completion in public, toasting their attraction to each other in private. Last week, in anticipation of their first night together, he'd already bought the wine. He'd even bought a candle. He felt a fool for what had happened between them. Even worse than losing her book, he'd lost her friendship. The congenial atmosphere of the little party dampened considerably as Thomas Finley entered and started talking over his co-workers. Zack ignored him, huddling in the corner and chatting with JP and Mary about upcoming projects in L.A. "I've only handled a few screenplays," Zack said, "and the U.K. film scene is quite small. Hollywood might prove to be rather daunting."
"Faulkner thought so as well," JP said. "He was working with the director, Howard Hawks, out in California. He told Hawks he thought he'd work better from home. Hawks told him that was fine, not realizing Faulkner meant his real home, Mississippi. The man just packed up and went back to Mississippi to work from home."
Zack and Mary laughed. JP patted Zack on the shoulder and excused himself to the restroom.
"You'd like to go home, wouldn't you, Zack?"
Finley said, slapping his hand on Zack's back. Zack repressed a shudder and turned to face him. Of course, Thomas would wait until the second JP was gone to start in on him.
"England, I mean. I don't know if L.A. is safe for you. Have you ever had a tan in your life? Probably not. No tanning in a fog."
"I plan on working in L.A., Thomas, not playing."
"Working like Faulkner?" he asked with a smarmy grin.
"How many affairs did Faulkner have while out in L.A.? 3, 4?
"Of course, you're not married anymore, Zack, so I guess they won't count as affairs."
"Oh, wait, you're still married, aren't you? I'd forgotten."
"Hard to tell sometimes, so I guess Nora Sutherland was number one."
Zack locked eyes with Finley. "I am not, was not, and have not slept with Nora Sutherland. She is... was one of my writers. I try to respect that line."
"Writer? She's a whore, Zack, and we both know it."
"You don't know anything, Thomas," Zack countered.
"Call her whatever you want. She's still one of the most promising writers I've ever worked with. I'd far rather work with whores than hacks any day."
"Hacks?" Thomas took an angry step closer. "None of my writers are whores, and they're definitely not hacks."
"I wasn't talking about your writers."
Zack heard a collective gasp from around the room as the implication of his words sunk in.
"You son of a bitch." Before anyone but Zack could react, Thomas raised his arm to take a swing at him. But Zack had more fights with drunken football hooligans under his belt than he cared to admit, thanks to his days as a bartender in university. He ducked and swung back, making fierce, hard contact with Thomas's chin. His head snapped to the side, and Thomas went down in an instant. There was a long silence as the room seemed to take in the scene that had just played out before them. And then, it was filled with applause.